Well, hello and welcome back to the Dunking. And this is another former Patreon exclusive that's now become a regular YouTube video. I no longer offer Patreon exclusives except for a couple of shorts a month. Now you get early access to my long form content. At the $5 tier, you can also vote on like the deep dive research that I've got going on about once a month. I've got like a deep dive video that I'm working on, and you'll get to kind of prod me in a certain direction that way too. So anyway, if that's your sort of thing, the links are down below. And here's a video that originally went live about a month ago. Hope you enjoy. In 1677, in what would later be known as Massachusetts, a man named James Walker was given a piece of land that had just been taken from the Wampanoag people. And on that piece of land was a large rock, and on that rock was a lot of glyphs. Now it's known as the Dighton Rock, and the interpretations of this thing has been quite the mess. There's quite a lot of controversy surrounding it, and a lot of different cultural identities have been pinned to this thing. And that's going to be the focus of today's Patreon exclusive video. Thank you very much, by the way. Hi, I'm Dan, and welcome to Dunking. Now, the earliest accounts of this stone show up just a couple of years after Walker took possession of the land. And since no one had talked to the natives and found out what these markings meant to begin with, the provenance of them was completely questioned, and Native Americans were kind of put at the bottom of the heap. And even nowadays, they're not considered to be the ones according to mainstream, like public view, even though mainstream academics are quite certain that it's Native American provenance. It's actually considered to be Portuguese that control it. But we'll talk about that more down the road. The issue is, cultural identity has been wrapped up in this stone since day one. And even the identification and interpretation of the markings and stuff has these serious problems. For example, most of the academics that have looked at it from a Native American perspective come away with this opinion that, you know, Native Americans didn't write things like this for other Native Americans. This was most likely written for like a gift to a spirit or something along those lines. Something like communicating with the spirit. So it wasn't meant to be interpreted by somebody else. It wasn't meant to be read. It was more of a spiritual thing that happened with that stone is like what's commonly posited. So again, when we're looking at it from a Western perspective, trying to interpret the rock, well, obviously that becomes pretty problematic pretty quick. Now, Walker had lost his home in the early days of the battles with the Wampanoag people. And so when the battles ended and the Wampanoag were stripped of
huge tracts of land,
he was given a big chunk of that. And that's where that rock was, as I mentioned a minute ago. But the idea that Native Americans had created the rock was just absolutely rejected out of hand. In the early 18th century, Harvard professor Isaac Greenwood basically said that the Native Americans were too stupid and too lazy in order to figure out how to scratch a rock. So yeah, you can see the kind of lens that this thing's been interpreted with pretty much since day one. Another big issue throughout history has been the ownership of the rock. Whoever's owned it's got to have a pretty good degree of control into how it's interpreted and all that jazz and how it's presented to the public, and that issue continues to this day. In 2011, the Dighton Rock was a focal point of a celebration for Portuguese Americans being in the Americas for 500 years. It's presented as a Portuguese artifact. In 1768, the trend really started with a minister named Ezra Stiles, who took a serious interest in Native American artifacts, specifically in those carved stones. But the funny thing is that he separated those. The carved stones were one thing, the Native Americans were another. Those carved stones he always viewed through an old world lens, always. Some biblical lens, as a matter of fact. And as a result, he determined that it was the Phoenicians that had most likely done the Dighton Rock, and that it was about 5,000 years old script. Now the script for the Phoenicians had just been semi-cracked just a few years before, I think 1753. So at that time it was kind of all the rage. So it's not entirely unheard of or unthinkable that he would be like, oh, you know, maybe it's this brand new thing that everybody's talking about. It's right on his head, right? But obviously, the fact that he's just disregarding the possibility that it could be Native Americans while researching Native Americans, he really was into that stuff, into the Native American cultures, I mean, and it, just the separation, it seems very weird that he would have never encountered some glyphs that are on this anywhere, but at any rate, that was his position. In the late 18th and early 19th centuries, the Dighton Rock became so famous it was basically the most studied artifact in the Americas at the time. It was the subject of basically every big thinker of the time that was in the Americas. They were going to have some interpretation of it. And we got the Palmyrene civilization, which was like 300 BC or some crap. And then we had Chinese and Japanese, and of course Egyptian hieroglyphs got thrown around a bunch in there. But the first published claim came in 1781 by a Frenchman, Antoine Court de Gebelin. Of course, I'm going to be mispronouncing that like everything else, sorry. And basically his position was that it was the Phoenicians, but he had this weird, like the whole world's languages were all twisted together via Tower of Babel. So his interpretation of it was that it was basically Wu-laden. Like he had these big diagrams of all these different languages connecting together, and that's how all this got put together. And his position was there's absolutely no way that the Native Americans could have made this because, well, they didn't have an alphabet. And despite studying languages and going like batshit crazy diagramming the things, he didn't incorporate pictograms into his worldview. So I don't even know what to say about that, except for once again, Native Americans kind of got the back seat and the shaft, right? An interesting mingling of fact and nonsense came around in the 1820s by a Danish antiquarian, which is about as close as you're getting to an archaeologist then, Carl Christian Roffen. And he was the one who came up with the idea that the Norse were the people who discovered the Americas before Columbus, which we now know to be true. But he used a lot of crazy evidence to get there, like a lot of guys that come up with a hypothesis that's pretty contentious. Back in those days, that was highly contentious. And he used a lot of evidence. He kind of grasped at straws. And he was highly, like everyone else back then, didn't think highly of the Native Americans. And so he believed that the Dighton Rock could not possibly have been carved by them. Therefore, he used it as evidence for his position there. Which sounds kind of bad enough, because it's like mingling, like I say, fact and fiction, but it gets even worse. This was used to reinforce the mound builder myths that basically the mound builders were not so much Native Americans, that it was a lot of influence by other cultures, and because they were just, obviously it took somebody smarter than them to know how to stack dirt on top of each other. So stacking rocks is hard enough, and stacking dirt, good God, now you're really getting out there with the technological skill level. I mean, he went so far as to say that the Vikings interbred with the native population and improved them accordingly, which, you don't even know what to say about stuff like that. I can say this. I'm happy to live in a day when we most people recognize that as just batshit crazy thinking. Not everybody, sadly, but most people recognize that as just gross. And back then, it seemed like most people thought that way, so I'll at least count my blessings in that regard. And one other way back then that this position was demonstrably bad was it informed this kind of a romantic opinion of manifest destiny. These Vikings were like the settlers crossing the country and doing the same thing. We're improving the natives as we... Yeah, so the interpretation, while on the surface doesn't seem too terribly horrible, given the politics of the time, oh man, it had some ugly results. I'd like to say finally, but given the way history goes more recently is probably the best way of putting this. In 1912, Amherst professor Edmund Delabar came up with the idea that it was the Portuguese that made this rock, that inscribed it. And that really resonated with not just the Portuguese Americans, but also the Portuguese in Portugal. Since it's par for the course at this point, it shouldn't surprise you to find out that he also discounted the possibility of Native Americans making the rock. He thought that maybe they recorded it in some of their legends and stuff, but he didn't think there was any chance of them actually making it. Earlier I mentioned ownership being an issue, and right now the Portuguese Society for Royal Antiquities, that's from Portugal, not an American society, they own that rock. And as such, there's a pretty slim chance of it being presented in any way that completely undermines it being of Portuguese origin. I mean, as you can see here, it is presented with four photographs. And the second one is Native American, but the first one's Portuguese. And it's presented in a manner to the public that, well, like I mentioned earlier, in 2011, they had that whole big get-together of the Portuguese Americans. And this rock was the touchstone. This was the proof that's been 500 years of America or Portuguese in America. So this rock's history, I mean, they moved it in the 1950s. But like I said earlier, basically, the ownership of this thing really is all about the interpretation at this point. And that's, well, that's not science. I mean, the scientists involved will push hardcore against that, and they'll say, we have nothing to do with that, but, and they don't. But, I mean, their hands are tied, man. I doubt that if somebody got all hardcore about it and they're like, I'm going to prove this wrong, I don't even know if they'd be allowed access to the rock. Now, the story of this rock is about more than just erasing indigenous people's history in the Americas, which is bad enough. But it's also directly tied to the open discrimination that they faced in the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, and even continue to today. I mean, the idea that this thing could not be made by their hands was bad enough, but then using it to inform other things like manifest destiny or similar type of ideas, like that they were had to be interbred with white people to just like have a brain on their shoulders enough to scratch a rock, really says a lot about how society and culture viewed Native Americans at that time. Now, the fact that things like this happen frequently and so brutally throughout human history has caused historians and archaeologists and stuff to have kind of a knee-jerk reaction to anything that looks like hyper-diffusionism, and quite frequently that reaction's warranted. Sometimes it's not, in my opinion, but that has a lot to do with why you see that. Just no. They've seen what this has been part of in the past. Thankfully, again, I don't think that we live in times, at least in the West, where that's nearly as much of a possibility as it was before, but we do always have to be on the lookout for those sort of things. The native tribe in the region, the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe that would have a claim to that rock, has basically given up even arguing that they might have any providence in having created the rock, or their ancestors had anything to do with it. And that seems kind of sad. But see, the thing is, like, they just recently opened a gaming commission. They have what, Indian casinos, as your grandparents call them, right? Now, that's a great, real way for them to feed their families and to better the tribe, right? And, you know, it's a sad thing, but it's a reality. You got a people here that are culturally, they've been tried to have been erased, right? They've faced a brutal, open, determined attempt to destroy their culture. But they still have a cultural identity. Those kinds of people, those kinds of cultures tend to have this very pragmatic view of things like this. So when it comes to that casino, they needed votes to get that in. You can't just make an Indian casino. You have to get it voted into the area and stuff. It has to at least pass certain laws and restrictions. So your public face is important, and, you know, arguing with the locals about the provenance of this rock isn't going to help. The casino is a real win. That rock, that's just one more artifact that colonists have pissed all over. Who cares? Well, thank you so much for watching. I'm sorry this came out a little bit late. We'll try to keep that from happening again in the future. I really appreciate your support, as I've said so many times before. Click the like and subscribe, man. Thanks a lot. You guys have a great day.